Anki's transport fell away reluctantly, revealing the horror of a ship tearing itself at the seams. She watched through teary eyes as the destruction engulfed everything around her. The dark opened up before her, framed by flames and jagged steel. The transport vectored away from the carnage and burned hard away from the collapsing Saratora. Anki's heart rattled in her chest, her breathing bordering on hyperventilation. In the distance, she saw a Keshnarian moon, the gray rocky orb reflecting the burning light of her ship. The light increased in luminosity, and her transport buckled as turbulence formed around her fledgling spacecraft. The monitors showed debris flinging past her, cracking against her ship in a fiery haze of destruction. "Did I escape only to be killed in this bucket?" she asked herself as the fear gripped her tight. She had little pilot training, but she knew enough to steer the craft and try to avoid being ripped apart by chunks of the Saratora scorching past. The transport was hit, causing it to list uncontrollably. It took her a moment to realize that the craft was rolling as the image of the Keshnarian moon continued to change perspective on the monitor, floating to each corner of the screen every few seconds. She closed her eyes to fight the urge to vomit. Anki's hands found the manual controls and tried to calculate how much counterthrust was needed to control the spin. It was difficult with her eyes closed, but as the shifting sensation of her stomach finally settled to something less nauseating, she figured she had done it. Through opened eyes, she saw the monitor shrouded in flames. She couldn't tell if the transport was on fire from the Saratora going nova, or if it was entering atmosphere. "Either way, it's terrifying," she thought as she gripped the control with her sweaty hands. The transport bucked, and another scattering of large shards of burning material beat against the hull. The strike knocked the transport into a different trajectory, aimed directly for the moon. Anki tried to shift the control, but the transport wasn't responding to her commands. Her eyes darted across the console and found a button designated as a flight control reset switch. She shrugged and pressed it, but nothing seemed to happen. At least, not anything significant. Each pull on the control was negligible, but it was the only thing she could do as the moon grew bigger. Hitting atmosphere jarred the transport and jostled her inside the cockpit. She winced, feeling like she had been kicked in the stomach as her body slammed forward, the lap belt being the only thing holding her to her seat. There was a good bit of news, though, she noticed as she pulled the control back. The front of the transport rose slightly in relation to her movement. It wasn't a significant change, but it did slow the transport down. If anything, it'll make the crash slightly less devastating, she thought. It was a sense of humor as much as it was an innate desire to soften the blow of knowing she was about to die. Anki's transport bucked again, rolling slightly but not uncontrollable. She noticed a shift in thrust as well, which meant the drive was faltering, or the change in altitude was affecting the drive's performance. She wasn't experienced enough to tell the difference. With no input from her, the shift corrected itself, leveling out and decelerating. She looked around the cockpit, confused. The ship was in manual mode, which meant that she was supposed to be in control, as stupid a decision as that was turning out to be. "I'm not a fucking pilot," Anki thought as the transport shifted again. Her hands on the controls were useless again. Did the autopilot re-engage? There was no indication either way, but the moon was growing larger with each passing moment. She could see the debris field from the Saratora burning against the landscape. Her heart sank. There was nothing anyone could do. there were no survivors. How could there be? Another lurch in the transport drove her thoughts away from the burning pyre below. The jarring movement of the ship was accompanied by an alarm as it raced towards the ground. She knew better than to brace for impact, but fear made her do it anyway. Her elevation was red-lined. If the ship didn't correct itself, she would be a crater in the dirt like the rest of the Ceratora. It was imminent, regardless of how much she wished it wasn't. Time slowed down, and then it stopped. Anki's body was wrapped in collision gel as the nose of the transport dove into the waiting landscape of the Keshnarian moon. The coolness of it sent shivers down her spine as the sound of crunching metal filled her ears. She expected the feeling of her limbs being crushed or torn from her body, but with each jostling movement, the cocoon of cold gel continued to expand around her, holding Anki still in its suffocating grip. Her ears were ringing, the thud of her beating heart like a drum in her head. She couldn't move, but as far as she could tell, she wasn't injured in any significant way. There was a haunting chime of the alarm dying in the background, the sound of it muffled by the gel and her helmet. Her fingers flinched, spreading out in an attempt to move. Anki felt like she was buried in slush, the cold making her body numb. But with each movement, she was able to gain higher mobility as the gel dissipated around her. It took several minutes to break out of the hold of the gel enough to not feel so claustrophobic. Anki sat in the cockpit, panting on stale air as she noticed the ship was no longer providing breathable air to her. She groaned as she brought her hands up to her helmet to pull it off. It was difficult, almost as if the helmet had become a part of her. But after several hard tugs, it finally came loose and freed her from its confinement. Anki released the lap belt and rose to her feet. Her legs were wobbly, probably more from shock and fear than any type of internal injury, she assumed. The collision gel was still receding, but she had enough room to move around at least. She ran her hands along her arms to warm herself up, the cold slowly shaking off her body. Now that the numbness was falling away, she could tell she was uninjured, which came as a relief. The fear didn't budge at all, though. In the cockpit of the transport, Anki noticed a putrid smell seeping in through the vents. It took her a moment to realize it was smoke. She had no way of knowing for sure, but it seemed the transport was on fire, and if she didn't escape, she would be cooked to death. That was, if she didn't suffocate from the pluming smoke now filtering into the cockpit. "This is the worst day of my life," she said to no one as she moved to the airlock. She could only hope the air on the outside was breathable. Either way, she was most likely dead anyway. The airlock was cold to the touch as Anki tried to cycle it manually. With no power and no light, the transport was beginning to feel like a coffin. The fact that her life was in danger didn't make the symbolism of her dread any less dire. She pulled her hand away as the freezing cold of the airlock burned against her bare flesh. "If the transport is on fire, why is everything so cold?" she wondered. She did the only thing she could think of and kicked the airlock. But it didn't budge. The frost around the edges made it appear to be frozen shut, which was contrary to the smoke bellowing inside the cockpit. Her eyes were beginning to burn now, and her lungs ached. "I don't want to die here. Not like this," she whispered. Anki moved back to the console and ran her hand along the smooth surface, searching for something that might help her. There was no emergency evacuation switch or button, but she did find an electrical reset switch. She pressed it and was awarded with dim emergency lighting. It wasn't much, but it gave her hope that the airlock might have power. Behind her, the airlock loomed, frost caking it where each section met the next. But there was also evidence of power on the control panel to the right of it. Anki pressed the panel and watched nervously as the iris of the airlock shifted counterclockwise and opened, revealing the open air of a burning Keshnarian moon. All around her was debris that could only be from the Ceratora. It was piled around the transport, scattered remains of torn metal reaching for the sky. She moved to exit the transport and remembered her weapon still lay on the deck of it. She could only imagine the Greshans, having seen her transport crashing to the moon, wanting to come and finish the job. She found the weapon tucked between the seat and the left console. It was wedged into place, most likely due to the force of the crash and the collision gel cementing everything into immobility. She reached for it, tugging to free it from where it lay. It released into her grip on the fourth tug, the metallic housing of it frosty like the airlock had been. The cold steel burned in her grip, making her hands ache as she stepped outside the transport. Anki turned around to see her surroundings, and everything was smoldering or in flames. She set the weapon down next to a pile of burning debris and waited for it to warm up. The lapping of flames felt good as she rubbed her hands together above the flames. She listened to the surrounding area, the sound of fire and falling debris echoing. "I have to find a way out," she thought as the flames seemed to spread around her threateningly. The smoke was getting thicker now, most likely from the change in wind across the surface of the moon. But at least the atmosphere was breathable. Anki crawled from the wreckage, smoke and debris obstructing her vision and flooding her lungs with toxic fumes. Struggling to find her footing on the rocky terrain, she felt searing pain as a broken piece of fuselage sliced into her leg. Crying out, she pulled her way into a clearing, the wafting smoke finally starting to dissipate. Anki, alone and afraid of an unknown world, knew she was screwed. She was losing blood and needed a way off this barren world. In the distance, she could see movement. It was slight and obscured by the mix of ash and ozone from her burning transport, but it was movement nonetheless. "Hello?" she said, barely louder than a cough. She dug her heels into the ground and propelled herself forward on shaky legs. This was not how she envisioned her war efforts. She never imagined dying on some rock in the middle of the Allorian galaxy. "Where is the honor in this death?" she thought, knowing thoughts like that meant she wanted to give up. She swallowed down the fear and took another miserable step. The movement caught her attention again. This time it was closer, almost within range. Anki reached for her weapon, caressing the grip, massaging her hand into a comfortable hold. She might be injured, adrenaline pumping through her veins, but if she had to, she would blast whoever was coming to kill her. Her feet slid out from under her, and she slid several meters until she was able to stop herself. At the bottom of the rocky hill, she found the source of the movement she had seen before. It was a pale-skinned man. Aggression. "Hey," he said nervously. Without a moment's hesitation, Anki drew her weapon and leveled it at the man's face. She watched with smoke-burned eyes as he swallowed hard and lifted his hands. The enemy wanted to surrender, but she was never taught to take prisoners. Her index finger found purchase on the trigger, and the weapon steadied in her hand, her training taking control where her mind might fail. "Oh, shit," he said. And then she fired. Chapter 18. Brendel. There comes a time when you walk into a situation expecting the best and getting the worst. That time came and went with a scattering of moon rock splattering the landscape as the newest resident fired at Brendel. There was an odd cadence to the dance. Oh, shit, bang. Oh, shit, bang. Oh, shit, bang. It wasn't until he wiped the dust from his face that he realized the cadence fire was coming from his own gun to the tune of a waltz. Sure, Brendel had pulled the trigger that destroyed worlds, but somewhere in the coping mechanism of his mind, he was able to dissociate that moment from destroying people. It's a harder thing to dissociate firing a close-range weapon at someone who's firing back, he thought as he squeezed the trigger. The report of his gun was deafening and echoed off the rocky terrain. His assailant's weapon blasted orbs of kinetic energy in his direction, which were quickly dissipated across the rocky surface, but would hurt a lot if it actually hit him. There was only one reason they would be carrying a weapon like that, Brendel thought. The Telran had boarded their ship, and this person was trying to fight them off without compromising the hull. The surface of the moon contained a scattering of craters and boulders, which made staying out of the line of fire simple, but it also made returning fire without exposing himself difficult. Each time he popped his head up, there was another dusting of moon rock to his face, and he was already choking on it. Brendel knelt down behind a boulder and held his weapon, panting, trying to catch his breath in the dwindling atmospheric conditions of his new habitat. I haven't even been running and I'm already out of breath. Adrenaline coursed through his veins and he knew it was time to end the fight. He stood up and moved quickly around the rock he had been hiding behind. But the other person must have had the same idea because he faced them now. The gray uniform leading up to a Luthien woman's face, her amber eyes wide, and the barrel of her gun leveled at Brendel's face. She pulled the trigger. Brendel winced. Nothing happened. Brendel looked at her with shock. The weapon didn't fire. And then he realized why. It was an electric weapon, and the charge had dissipated. Relieved, he said the first thing that came to his mind. Tough break, but now that the shooting's over, maybe we could. His mouth was silenced by the impact of a heavy magnetic boot striking him. He staggered back, off balance. It was a weakness his enemy decided to capitalize on, because she was on top of him, punching him wildly. Brendel rolled her off of him, almost throwing her into the boulder. But he didn't think he hurt her. If anything, he was just pissing her off. She lunged towards him, knocking him to the ground, his weapon falling over the lip of a crater. She's fast, he thought, as a torrent of blows impacted his body in rapid succession. Each kick felt as if it was knocking the wind out of him, and with how thin the air was, breath was becoming a precious commodity. Brendel swung a heavy fist towards her and she ducked, smiling at the fact he had attempted and failed. She attacked again, fiercer, wilder. She was backing him into the crater. With nowhere else to plant his feet, he did the only thing he could think of. He grabbed her and tossed her over the edge, causing both of them to tumble down the rocky crevice to the bottom of the crater. Rocks cut and tore at his body, but he barely felt it as his heart raced. Brendel had always been afraid of heights, and falling wasn't doing him any favors. The end came with a sudden stop that succeeded where his attacker had failed in knocking the rest of the air out of his chest. She apparently didn't have the same problem he did, Brendel realized, as he felt the impact of her boot kicking him in the ribs. He rolled his body out of the way of the second kick, but exposed himself as he lay on his back, all but completely defenseless. She jumped on top of him, trying to beat past his flailing arms, trying to attack his face or gouge out his eyes. Somewhere in the onslaught of fists wailing on him, he realized he was laying on his gun. The problem with being on your back in a fight is that you are exposed to whatever damage the other person throws at you. The woman dishing out violence on Brendel was trained to hit where it hurt, which for Brendel was everywhere. He groaned and rolled with the punches, each one threatening to break a bone or puncture flesh. She was wild with rage, and a part of him wanted to strike back, but another part of him didn't want to harm a woman. "So much for growing up with morals," he thought as another blow glanced across his shoulder. He was running out of time to do something, so he went with the first idea that came to mind. Brendel timed the next swing with the inertia of her body springing forward, and he kicked his legs up and rolled backward, effectively pinning her in the same way she had him. He reached forward for his gun and felt the tight grip of her hands squeezing his throat. He was already having trouble breathing, but if he wanted to end the fight, then he needed the gun. He continued reaching, his vision tunneling as his fingers touched the hard steel of the grip. His head felt like it was about to explode as pressure built up. He could feel blood dripping from his nose as he strained to suck in air, fighting to get oxygen to his deprived lungs. He was running out of time. Brendel pressed the barrel of his gun against her face, the bulk of it covering it from her eyes down. "Let go," he choked. Her grip didn't loosen, though. He tried to stand up, but her grip was too tight. He reached down and pressed his hand against her throat as well, pushing with all his weight. Her flesh felt warm in his grip, and he could feel her fight to breathe, as well as the movement of her throat with each shallow gulp of air. "I said, let's go." His words were raspy and choppy. He wondered if she could even understand him. He drove the weapon down, pressing it hard against her face, knowing that the weight pressed against her would weaken her resolve. "Don't make me shoot you," he said, or at least he thought that was what he said. The sound coming from his lips was unintelligible. Her grip loosened, but she kept a hold of his throat. It was enough to breathe. They stared at each other for a long time, each one's grip loosening enough to relieve the other, but neither one willing to fully let go. He looked into her teary amber eyes. There was fear there, desperation. He could have seen it even if he had been blind, and there was a beauty there, too. He shook the thought from his head. He wasn't here to fight, or to do anything other than radio for help. Brendel tried to rise, but her grip held him fast. He didn't want to pull the trigger, but she wasn't leaving him with much choice. He took a deep breath, releasing it slowly, as they stared hard into each other's eyes. "Bang!" he screamed. The woman's eyes grew wide, expecting the weapon to discharge into her face. "Now let me go before I really pull the trigger," he said. Her grip faded, and then let go entirely. Brendel fell back, keeping the weapon trained on her. "Thank you," he said as he rubbed his sore throat. Each gulp of air felt like a gift as he inhaled deeply. He watched her back away, eyeing him warily. He could see the distrust in her eyes. "Hell, I can even smell it," he thought as she backed against a rock and leaned her body against it. Her gray coveralls were smudged with blood. Probably his, he presumed, until he saw the gash in her leg. "You're wounded," he said. The woman glared up at him. "I'll live," she spat. "If you have a medical kit on the transport, I can patch you up." She continued to stare at him. Distrust was potent as her amber eyes bore into his. She looked at his weapon as it lay next to him, and he wondered if she might try to take it. She didn't move, and neither did he. For a long while, at least. And then she did. Chapter 19. Anki. Thoughts of being manipulated into giving up flowed through Anki's mind. She had his life in her hands. All she'd have to do was squeeze harder, rip his throat from his pale Greshen neck, and he would have been dead. But that wasn't what happened at all. He had shoved his loaded weapon in her face, and the fear of being killed toyed with her emotions in a way that no amount of training could have combated. The sensation made her feel weak and powerless, and it left a bad taste in her mouth. She watched him, sitting on the ground, his weapon lying useless on the ground next to him. He didn't seem like much of a threat, but what he didn't have in fighting skill he more than made up for with quick thinking and strategy. This was the enemy's greatest threat. Cunning. Anki had to admit that it was a skill set that proved more useful to surviving than the training she had received on Luthia. She was trained to be a killer, weapons in hand or with only her hands. She never received training on solving the problems of going against a combatant more skillful than herself. Perhaps that was the issue all along. They trained me to die, she thought as she watched the man leaning back, his chest rising and falling as he fought to catch his breath in the thin atmosphere. She struggled as well, and the smoke wasn't helping at all. "Is your transport still operational?" he asked. Anki looked at him, meeting the gaze of emerald eyes looking back at her. She expected to see contempt, but it looked more like resilient hope. "It crashed and is burning. What do you think?" It was hard to keep the anger and contempt from her voice. She wondered why she was even concerned about that to begin with. "I know it isn't flyable, but if the computer system is operational, maybe I can use it to call for help," he said. He brushed his hair from his face. "I don't know. The ship was pretty damaged, and I was trapped by collision gel. It took me a while to break free." He smiled at her. "I'm sorry about that. I tried to control the landing a bit better, but there was too much external damage to your transport. Luckily, you had the collision gel." Anki glared at him. All this time, she thought the ship had a glitch disabling her ability to control its descent. Instead, this Greshen had been responsible for her crashing. Her blood was beginning to boil, and she could see the expression on the man's face begin to change as her eyes narrowed. "Maybe I need to explain myself," he said as he backed away, getting his feet underneath him to make it easier to stand. She watched as he pulled a comm unit from his jacket, the device reflecting light from a distant fire. "I used this device to hack into your transport's flight control system, but it was relatively unresponsive. I could get it to maneuver towards me, but controlling the pitch of the transport was next to impossible. You were crashing anyway, but I was trying to lessen the impact," he finished. "Why?" Anki asked, her voice biting back rage. The man shrugged for a moment, trying to find the right words to say. "Honestly, I saw the transport as an avenue to get off this rock. I was exiled off my ship, framed for treason. I'm just trying to survive." Anki made a move to stand, and the man flinched, but didn't draw up his weapon. She stood there, considering her options for a moment. He could have been telling the truth, but the truth didn't mean trusting him was a favorable option. Still, when she looked to the sky above, she saw the remnants of the Ceratora burning in the orbit surrounding the moon. She would be trapped and dead if they didn't find a way off the moon. Her transport was destroyed, and none of the burning bits of steel would provide any hope of getting back in orbit and heading home. "Why should I trust you?" He rose to his feet and stared at her. "I know you look at me as aggression, someone you think is your enemy. But that is the same way the Greshans on the ship that destroyed your ship look at me. I'm no longer aggression in the way I was before. I was called a traitor because I saw no value in conquering other worlds. I'm not a killer." "That doesn't answer my question," she snapped. He stood there, dumbstruck. "I don't have an answer to your question. I can only hope you'll believe me when I say I have no intention of doing you harm. All I want is a way off this moon and to survive." Anki watched him, trying to determine if she believed him or not. There were two things she knew for sure. The first thing being she was stranded with an armed Greshan with no way to get herself to safety. The second thing was that he had the means to shoot her dead and hadn't done so. At least, not yet. "Do you really think you can get us out of here?" He shrugged. "I can try," he answered. Anki responded by turning her back and walking towards her fallen transport. She held her breath for a moment, waiting for him to fire. But it didn't happen. After a few steps, she heard him follow behind her. "My name is Brendel. Brendel Quinn," he said. "What's your name?" She felt some reservation about answering his question, but in the end it didn't really matter if he knew her name. She answered anyway. "Anki Paro," she replied as she took a long stride over loose rocks. They climbed from the crater in relative silence. The only sound she heard was heavy breathing and the rustling of rocky debris moving under their hands and feet. They crested the rim, and they were surrounded by pillars of dark smoke wafting around them. The air was thinner, and the smoke made breathing even worse than it had been before. She covered her face with the neck of her uniform and made her way towards the transport as Brendel followed close behind. When they made it to the wreckage, she was surprised to find it not engulfed in flames like she thought it would be. "Here it is," she said, gesturing to the twisted carcass that was once a personal transport. Now it was technologically advanced wreckage, the type of thing she never would have bothered with when she spent her summer working salvage. The irony was that Brendel wanted to tap into it and try to call for help. It seemed unlikely to Anki, though. She stepped inside and let Brendel enter the airlock leading into the small cockpit of the transport. Most of the collision gel had receded and allowed enough room for both of them to enter, though it was still a tight fit. Brendel sat as Anki leaned over his shoulder and watched him work. His hands scrolled over the console, searching for something that Anki was unsure of. "Where is the interface for your radio?" Puzzled, Anki shrugged. "I don't know about a secondary interface, but the helmet contained the controls for communicating off-ship." She pointed to the helmet lying between the seat and the left console, the wiring fixed to the console and disappearing behind a kick panel below. This should work, Brendel said as he lifted the helmet from the deck and manipulated it in his hands. Anki watched as he worked, first disconnecting the radio controls from the helmet and scanning over the console with his comm unit. The device in his hand chirped and a smile spread on his face. We use the same frequencies, he said enthusiastically. I could reveal our identities by sending a beacon out verbally, but there's no way of knowing who might respond. The Telran knows I'm here, so they should ignore it. But if we don't mask the identity of this transport, then it could put us in more danger than it's worth. How can you mask a distress call? Anki asked. Brendel smiled and removed something from his jacket. With this, he said, lifting a small beacon in his hands. This is a neutral distress beacon. It should ping pretty far out into the dark, but I needed a transmitter and a significant power source to make it work. She watched as he removed another item from his jacket and worked everything together. The beacon was a cylinder-shaped device, and he used the wiring from the helmet to connect to the beacon, which made it resemble a battery of some sort. And with that, we should have a signal reaching out to the stars. He smiled as he looked up at Anki, but she kept her reservations to herself. What do we do now? She asked. Brendel moved his comm unit along the beacon and measured the power output of the device. It could take a while to get a reading on anything picking up our signal, but in the meantime we just sit and wait. The idea of sitting alone with aggression didn't sit well with Anki. But what other choice did she have? What she didn't expect was what happened next. Someone answered the call with a ping of their own. Chapter 20. Brendel. They watched as the ship fell from the sky. It was under thrust, but not in a way that made Brendel at all comfortable with whoever was piloting the machine. It was once a warship, he noticed, because of the protrusion on cannons pointing out from the dull gray hull. If the inside matches the outside, then this ship is a flying hunk of space trash, Brendel thought as the landing gear descended from the skin of the unknown craft, hissing and grinding as metal raked against metal. It landed, if you call it that, with a rumbling of shaken ground and scattering of dust, choking the atmosphere with debris. Brendel and Anki shielded their eyes and held their breath as everything settled around them. They watched as the port airlock cycled open, Brendel with his weapon drawn, the cold steel reminding him of the threat that might appear on the other side of the airlock. He didn't want to make the same mistake and get shot at for the second time in one day. At least this time he didn't feel responsible for crashing the ship, though it might have benefited if he had helped pilot it. The ship didn't appear to be Greshen, but his was a hated race regardless of who they might encounter. The airlock was open now, but they saw no one on the other side. Anki squinted to look through the unsettled dust wafting in front of the airlock. I don't see anyone, she said. Do you think no one is on board? It was a question that didn't sit well with Brendel. The ship wasn't likely to be empty, and the attempt at trickery might mean they were in for more danger than they bargained for. Brendel's grip on his weapon tightened. No, there's no way that kind of landing was computerized. There's someone on board who just doesn't want to be seen, he said quietly. Stay behind me. Anki ducked behind him, keeping her movements small as he moved forward in a crouch. The scattering of dust on the wind peppered his face with grit, and he tasted it on his teeth. But he didn't have time to focus on the mouthful of dirt. It was more important to stay vigilant, alive. The rocks were loose in this area.
Not the most appropriate of landing spots, Brendel thought.
Even ships without engines requiring air intakes could be damaged if foreign material got snatched up into the controls or vectoring nozzles. The most amateur of pilots would have found a more solid surface for landing. It only made his theory of someone being on board more realistic.
"Do you see anything?" he asked.
Anki peered over his shoulder.
"No,"
she answered. He felt her breath hot on his neck, the rapid breathing of nervousness hanging heavy in the air around him. He could relate. He was scared shitless right now, if he was honest with himself.
"Drop the weapon, sir. I don't want to shoot you, but I will."
The voice seemed to come from all around him. Brendel looked around, ignoring the demand for him to drop his gun. The thought of them prying it from his cold, dead fingers came to mind, but he wasn't much in the mood for dying today. He lifted his hands instead, refusing to drop the weapon to the ground, but hoping it was a display that showed the unknown man that he was willing not to resort to violence. Willingness and being forced into violence were two different things in his mind, and with the day he was having, Brendel wasn't much in the mood for forced compromise. He wasn't dropping anything.
"When a man tells you he will shoot you, you take him seriously. Yet when I said I would shoot you, you kept walking towards me. Do you have a problem with women?"
Anki asked, the sarcasm heavy on her tongue. He would have laughed if fear wasn't an all-consuming emotion coursing through his veins at the moment.
"What?"
Brendel asked, looking back at her, distracted. That was a mistake. A shot rang out and Anki grabbed his collar, pulling him towards her before the projectile hit either of them. Somewhere in the swift movement, Brendel realized his weapon was no longer in his hands, but instead was in hers as she aimed it towards a man hiding behind the aft section of the ship.
"What was that about?"
Brendel asked, rubbing his neck where his collar had chafed with his skin. Never mind the fact that he was a little embarrassed to be manhandled like that.
"You're an idiot," Anki said. "You stood there looking stupid when an armed man told you to drop your weapon.
I just saved you. That's what that was about."
Brendel looked where she was aiming and the man poking his head out from behind the ship. "I told you I didn't want to shoot you, but you didn't drop the gun. And I saw you were aggression. I thought you were coming to kill me."
The man's voice quivered. It was fear. Brendel recognized it.
"He's not armed any longer," Anki said, moving the gun to aim it directly at Brendel.
"Come out from behind the ship and speak to me directly."
"So I guess she's in charge now," Brendel thought.
He saw out of the corner of his eye the man peeking around the corner. Brendel looked at Anki and eyed her warily, the rise in his eyebrows saying,
"I thought we were through pointing guns at each other."
And she just shrugged.
You're not Gresham?
The man said it like a question. The weapon he carried looked too heavy for his small frame.
That might have been why he missed, Brendel thought.
Anki laughed. It was the first time since he had met her that she made a sound other than mild regret at not killing him. The sound of her laughter made Brendel smile, but not too big, considering the fact that she might not have decided whether or not to pull the trigger yet.
"I promise you I am the furthest thing from aggression you will ever know," she said.
Brendel thought about looking offended, but it wasn't a good time. At this point, he wasn't sure he qualified to be considered aggression anymore, either.
"I don't want to shoot a woman," the man said. "Won't you drop the weapon too?" Yeah, drop it, Brendel whispered. A coy smile showed his teeth. Anki just glared at him.
I tell you what, I will lower the weapon, but I will not drop it unless you do the same.
Anki replied.
He's not going to go for that,
Brendel started to say, but Anki shut him up by driving the business end of the gun hard enough into his face to cause his lip to bleed.
Ouch! He said, louder than necessary.
Shut up, she sneered. She looked back at the man in hiding and said,
Do we have a deal?
The man peeked around the corner again and watched as Anki lowered the weapon to a more neutral position. He followed her move, allowing his own weapon to rest at hip height. The man watched Anki lower the weapon to the ground, and he matched her movements until both guns were resting safely on the ground. Anki grabbed hold of Brendel and shoved him away from the weapon.
Away from any danger of my taking it up again and doing something stupid, he thought she might say.
There, that wasn't so hard, was it? Anki said. Brendel could see the satisfaction of neutralizing the threat without having to fire a shot in her eyes. There was a smugness to her look that borderlined on condescending, but it was also endearing. He liked the way the lines of her face came down to accentuate her lips. It was like, despite the fierceness of the warrior she was, there was a softness she didn't want people to see. That was his perception, anyway. If nothing else, she struck him as peculiar. But that just made her all the more interesting, in his opinion.
Who are you? The short man said as he came from around the ship.
Fully erect, Anki was at least a head taller than him as they stood on level ground. Brendel thought it might have been the shade of the ship, but his skin was an ashy gray color, which made his yellowish eyes look like tiny stars against the darker canvas of his flesh. The tattoo of a bird-like creature was etched into the bald skin atop his head, and Brendel wondered if it might have been a religious thing.
My name is Anki, and this Greshen is named Brendel. We mean you no harm, she said. He was armed. Are you his prisoner?
I am no one's prisoner, Anki assured him.
Is he your prisoner, then?
The question was a bold one. Anki turned to Brendel, and she looked on the verge of laughter. Not to be pushed into a corner he couldn't get out of, Brendel said.
We haven't come to terms on that, actually, Brendel said, trying to ease his way into the conversation.
Anki rolled her eyes.
But like she said, we don't mean you any harm. We just hailed you because we need a ride off this moon and back to some kind of civilization. If you can provide a ride for us, then we would really appreciate it.
He finished. The gray man eyed them warily. Even though they were unarmed, the man was afraid of them. Brendel knew it was because whatever world he came from had at least heard of the Greshen Empire. Was there anywhere in the Alorian galaxy where the word Greshen didn't evoke fear and loathing?
My name is Dace, the man said. My husband and I escaped our world from your people. Everyone we know is dead. How can we trust that you won't kill us?
The words hit Brendel like a kick in the chest.
You have my word, no harm will come to you, he said.
He meant every word of it, too. Daze shook his head. Brendel could tell it wasn't enough. The furrowing of Daze's brow preceded his words.
Your word means nothing to me. To us. Your people. Your empire of lies slaughtered our world. Why should I trust you?
Brendel looked at Dace, not knowing what to say. The man spoke the truth, and he didn't have any right to try and refute it. The Greshens took everything they wanted. He knew it just as well as Anki and Dace. The only difference was he once was the heel stepping on the throats of people like Dace and Anki. It didn't matter that he wasn't that man anymore. He wondered if they would understand that he gave up his life to not be that person anymore. As Brendel stood lost in thought, trying to find the right words to say, another gray man stepped from around the ship and stood behind Dace. Brendel watched as the other man moved in, whispering into Dace's ear. Dace's eyes widened. The second man looked a lot like Dace, though he was skinnier and slightly taller. He also didn't have any visible tattoos, though his jacket and pants covered more flesh than Dace's wardrobe. Brendel remembered that Dace said he had a husband. This man was presumably him. Dace turned to whisper into his lover's ear. About what? Brendel could only speculate. But their conversation had put Dace more on edge than he had been before. What's wrong? Anki asked. Both men had fear in their eyes as they looked at Brendel and Anki. But the fear wasn't directed at the people standing before them. It was because of something else.
My husband Malekia said our ship has been pinged by another warship. It seemed that entering this moon's atmosphere triggered our transponder to emit a signal, and I was too concerned with not crashing the ship to pay any attention to it.
Who is it? Anki asked. Dread crept into her voice as well. This fear made Brendel suddenly more uncomfortable than he had been when Anki had his own weapon pointed in his face. Dace looked at them with a forlorn expression on his face and said,
It is called the GNS Telran. The Greshens have found us.
Chapter 21. Anki. Brendel said something vulgar under his breath while Dace and Malekia held each other, dread in their yellow eyes. Anki ignored the fear coursing through her veins, but it wasn't something she was trained to do. This form of coping with danger was something more primal, more dangerous. A thousand thoughts flowed through her mind, each one a calculated risk which would ultimately result in their destruction. How do you stand up to a Greshen war machine? A world killer. There was movement to her right, and she finally realized Brendel was reaching for his gun and stuffing it back in his holster. He said something, but she wasn't paying any attention. Only the dull thudding sound of her heart beating in her ears captured her thoughts. The shock of the situation seeming to remove her ability to think clearly. The next instant, she saw Brendel standing in front of her, shaking as if the ground was quaking beneath his feet. It took a moment for Anki to realize the shaking was a result of him grasping her arms and trying to get her attention.
Got to go, Anki, we've got to go,
he was shouting when she finally shook the veil from her mind. His grip was strong, but not tight enough to hurt.
All right,
she stammered. The world came back into focus. The thud of her heart in her ears. The vision of Brendel and the other two men hustling towards the airlock of a ship that looked like it had seen better days. Every fiber of her being said,
This is a death trap. You're going to die.
But she followed anyway. She didn't have a choice. Or did she? The three men stopped when they reached the bridge. It was dark, almost dead. The ship must have been shut down.
She wondered if Days had shut down after landing, or Malekia did so when the Tel'ran found them. That didn't matter now because it was too late. Shutting down the ship didn't make them invisible. But she doubted either of the Leakin men knew that. Brendel was saying something to Days. Or was it Malekia? He was pointing and barking orders. The men were trying to handle whatever task Brendel had given them. And Anki felt useless. She knew she shouldn't feel that way. She knew she could help. She had been on a ship before she joined the Luthien Navy. She had skills usable for this kind of work, but she didn't know what needed to be done.
What do I need to do?
Her question sounded meek to her own ears. All of the confidence she demonstrated as a fighter meant nothing in the face of this kind of danger. It was ridiculous, and she knew it, but somewhere her confidence had been shaken, and she was struggling to find it. She dared not wonder if she would ever find it again. Brendel didn't hear her, or didn't care. He looked caught up in his own thoughts. The actions of a man trying to save himself from the destruction he knew he didn't have the strength to stave off. Anki took a deep breath and shouted this time, "What do you need me to do?" Everyone stopped what they were doing and looked at the shouting woman. It was quiet enough she could hear her breath whistling lightly through her nostrils. A grin showed on Brendel's face, and he said,
"Do you know how to run a pre-launch sequence?"
"Yes," she answered. It was true. Or at least it was a few years ago when she was salvaging Luthien ships. This one was different, though.
"Good. I don't suppose you know how to bypass a launch sequence so we can skin out of here, do you? We don't really have time to sit out in the open like this."
Brendel was talking from the other side of the console, his hands rapidly moving about the surface as he tried to bring the ship back to life. Anki looked at Brendel. He was hiding the desperation she knew must be going through his mind. She had never bypassed a safety parameter on a ship before, but she had salvaged a dead vessel by rerouting all of its safety protocols to a dummy switch.
"It worked like a bypass at the time," she thought.
"I can try," she answered. Brendel inhaled sharply before responding.
"Please do, and hurry. The Tel'ran is minutes away from this moon's orbit. If we can get airborne, then I think we can make it to the other side of this rock and take off with a nice barrier between us and them."
Anki nodded and went to work. The ship was structurally sound, but corrosion was beginning to form on the unpainted surfaces. Moving around the bridge, she noticed a console with the name Replicade etched in an embossed pattern over the plated metal that didn't seem to match the rest of the aesthetics of the ship, though.
"Someone changed the name of the ship,"
she thought as she recovered the console and stuck her hands in with the rat's nest of wiring. It had been a few years since she worked salvage, but it was hard to forget some things once you've done them enough. She found the wiring going to the launch computer and tore them from the bulkhead. It wasn't the nicest way to treat a ship you hoped might save your life, but it was the most efficient way to get the bird in the air. Her fingers found the red and black wires going to the drive motor and twisted them together. She felt the electricity coursing through her fingers painfully, but she ignored it. Electrical burn treatments could wait.
This ship needs to get airborne now.
All around them, lights began to illuminate, casting shadows in areas where several diodes had gone dark. It was apparent that upkeep of the ship hadn't been a priority to Dace and Malekia. She wondered if they even knew how to maintain a ship. It was obvious that neither one made a very good pilot based on the landing she witnessed.
How's it coming?
Brendel asked. His fingers were darting across a screen, the glow of it illuminating his face in a pale blue.
The drive is on, she answered.
Not only were the lights on,